This is John Ivy from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the December 2010 issue of Boys Life magazine. Our first article today is Boys Life Headliners, pages 14 and 15. Jim and Joe Rosa, born April 7th, 1993, West Windsor Township, New Jersey, made headlines. Twins Joe and Jim placed first and second, respectively, in six major cross-country races last fall, including the Nike Cross Nationals Northeast Regional. Joe shattered course records of distances at distances of 2.5 miles and 5,000 meters. 3.1 miles. It placed third in the Nike's Nationals Championship after leading the race until the last 100 meters. The scoop? In 2008, Jim ran the fastest time in the country for high school freshmen in the 3,200 meters at 9 minutes 11 seconds. Joe was ranked fourth nationally. Off course. Joe, basketball, baseball, math, science. Jim, watching movies, English, writing, and persuasive essays. The future? The boys hope to have an undefeated senior cross-country season capped by a 1-2 finish at Nike Nationals. They also hope to improve their track times and run in college. Advice? Joe, listen to your coach and learn all you can about your sport. Jim, competitive running has ups and downs. Don't let your highs make you complacent, and don't let your lows make you give up. John Nirodaka and Scott Boisvert. John, November 11, 1994, and Scott, May 28, 1993. To hometown, John is from West Windsor, New Jersey. Scott, from Chandler, Arizona. Scout rank, Life Scout. John, Troop 6284, Hightstown, New Jersey. And Scott, Troop 280 in Chandler. They made headlines for winning the 2010 American Museum of Natural History's Young Naturalist Award. The scoop? John's project explored causes and effects of pollution in Bear Brook, a stream near his home. He chose his project after studying the brook for his soil and water conservation merit badge. Scott collected water samples across Arizona, trying to find chemicals in the water that would stop the movement of a fungal disease that kills frogs. Best advice. For a project, find something that you're passionate about, because then you want to work on it, Scott says. Other interests. John, violin, video games. Scott, varsity tennis, backpacking, mountain biking. The future? John wants to pursue an education in science. Scott wants to go into a medical research field. And our next article, A Year of Celebration, pages 24 and 25. Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, and venturers across the country honor the BSA's 100th birthday. There were parades, special campouts, and super-sized celebrations, from the Centennial Parade in Washington, D.C., to an ambitious tree-planting project that will take another century to complete. Scouts all over the country came up with creative ways to celebrate the BSA's 100th birthday this year, while also looking forward to the future. Read on for a small sampling of the 100th birthday parties, and tell us how you celebrated at boyslife.org/links/100celebrations. And here it has pictures of the variety of things some of the boys are doing, from camping out to trying to set fires to rock climbing and to parades. And there's one picture here of Scouts Daniel Estes, Stephen Sumrall, and John Hull, left to right, worked to restore native vegetation to the Atchafalaya Basin. Swamp Things. Louisiana Scouts honored the BSA with a massive restoration project that could last another 100 years. Scouts from the Evangeline Area Council in South Louisiana might have spent just one day last February celebrating the centennial, but the service project they began that day will last several lifetimes. South Louisiana is home to the Atchafalaya Basin, the largest swamp in the United States. Its bayous and marshes provide a natural habitat for plants such as cypress trees and animals such as alligators. But the basin is under siege from invasive weeds that choke out the native cypress and threaten to overrun the entire region. If left unchecked, the ecology of the whole system could change dramatically, driving out the alligators and other wildlife that call the area home. Boy Scouts to the rescue. On that one day last February, 1,300 scouts and family members planted 4,457 cypress trees, one for each registered scout in the council. It was the first in a series of tree planting projects that will eventually add 1 million trees to the basin in the next 100 years. I love the basin, says 17-year-old Eagle Scout Renee Gilbaugh from Troop 174 in Brobridge, Louisiana. I spent a lot of time out there camping and fishing. I love to help bring it back to being a cypress forest. Renee and seven other scouts from Troop 174 camped out in the basin the night before, then got up bright and early on a Saturday morning to start planting. They split into teams of two, with one scout carrying a tree planting tool called a dibble and the other caring for cypress samplings. After a little practice, it just took seconds to plant a single tree that could live for centuries. I planted 300 trees, Renee says, but the project is far from over. The council has adopted the basin for the long term. It will offer special patches to scouts who canoe a certain number of miles through the wetlands and different patches to scouts who pick up trash along the way. And there will be more tree planting days in the years and decades to come. It felt wonderful to be part of that. But there's a lot more work to be done, Renee says. I love to be able to go out there with my kids someday and say, I planted some of this. I was here. One Grand Parade. On July 25th, one day before the start of the 2010 National Scout Jamboree, more than 10,000 people marched in the BSA's Grand Centennial Parade in Washington, D.C. The parade route took the participants down Constitution Avenue, just blocked from the White House. The parade featured scouts from every state. Floats depicted the BSA values of leadership, achievement, service, character, and the outdoors. And there were sections dedicated to each of the 10 decades of scouting. A Jamboree in Michigan. The Southwest Michigan Council held its birthday camp out and parade last April. There were a series of action events, including a climbing wall, human foosball, and an endurance course. The next morning, the scouts participated in a parade through the town of Marshall, where a house still stands that was once owned by William D. Boyce, the founder of scouting in the United States. Centennial Conservation Day. Scouts from the Utah National Parks Council celebrated by participating in the BSA Centennial Conservation Day in May. The project called for the scouts to work with the U.S. Forest Service on improving and restoring a critical watershed area in the Uinta Wahchatch National Forest. About 850 Boy Scouts worked on rail maintenance on four trails, removed noxious weeds, litter, and dead tree limbs, took inventory of paths on which visitors were illegally operating motor vehicles, and put up 400 feet of fencing to close off 10 miles of illegal roads. At the same time, Cub Scouts delivered flyers to homes in the area, informing residents on how they can help preserve the land. So it has pictures here of scouts holding out areas where they're almost looks like a tug of war, but they're holding off areas where trees are coming and where they do not want people walking. A historical Klondike. Anybody can hold a Klondike Derby. Boy Scouts and Weeblo Scouts from the Daniel Webster Council held the 100th anniversary Klondike last winter that featured representation from every decade of scouting. At each station, scouts were asked to complete tasks appropriate to that time in history, including cow milking, semaphore signaling, ice resuscitating, and first aid drills. Our next article, Be a Guitar Hero, starting on page 32. Get started playing the guitar with these easy steps. Stuff you'll need. With an electric guitar, you need some sort of guitar amplifier and a cord that goes from the guitar to the amp. To keep from driving your parents crazy, consider getting headphones for this setup. Put down that Guitar Hero controller and pick up a real guitar. You can start playing by learning just a few things about your guitar and then how to play a couple of simple chords that make up many of your favorite songs. Here are tips from Eagle Scout Dan Emery, owner of the New York City Guitar School. Parts of the guitar. It doesn't make any difference whether your guitar is electric or acoustic, the kind that doesn't plug in. The strings on an electric guitar are a little easier to push down, but you can take an acoustic guitar wherever you go. The important parts of the guitar. Neck, where you actually play the guitar, contains the frets. Frets, metal strips along the neck that determine the pitch when the strings are pushed down against them. Head, contains the tuning keys, which can be adjusted to ensure your chords are in tune. Nut, the bottom of the head where the neck joins the head. Stuff you'll need. To keep your guitar in tune, you'll need a tuner. This can be as simple as a single tuning fork or pitch pipe, or as complicated as a programmable digital strobe tuner. An electronic tuner will be more accurate than a pitch pipe or a tuning fork, but it will also cost more. There are dozens of electronic tuners, so find the one that fits your budget and your basic needs and gets good reviews at online retailer sites. Pitch pipes and tuning forks will require a little more practice to tune your guitar properly. Identifying strings and frets. Strings are numbered from thinnest to thickest. The thinnest string is called the first string. The next thinnest is the second string, and so on. The frets are also numbered. The fret closest to the nut is the first fret. The next one is the second fret, and so on. Electric versus acoustic. Here are some pros and cons for each. Electric guitar pros. You can get a wider range of sounds, so you're more likely to stay motivated in practice. Electrics are typically a little easier to play. Electric guitar cons. You need to buy more accessories, like an amplifier, which can cost more than the guitar. You can't grab it and go, like you can with an acoustic. Acoustic pros. You can play them just about anywhere. Some smaller models are even made for camping trips. Since you don't need an amplifier, you can put more of your budget into buying a better guitar. Acoustic guitar cons. The acoustic guitar will only have its one sound and you might get bored with it. Some acoustic guitars are more affected by changes in temperature and humidity, which can damage the instrument. Holding the guitar. Sit down and pick up your guitar. If you're right-handed, rest it on your right thigh with the head pointing left. If you're lefty, rest it on your left thigh with the head pointing right. Let the back of the guitar rest against your stomach or chest. This might feel a little awkward at first, but you'll get used to it. Picks. Stuff you'll need. Picks come in a wide range of sizes, shapes, and thicknesses, and are made from dozens of different materials, most from plastic or nylon, and they all will sound and feel different. Since most are inexpensive, it's easy to try out several and decide which one you like best. Of course, you can just strum with your thumb or learn how to pick with your fingertips or fingernails, especially when playing an acoustic guitar. identifying fingers. The thumb is called the thumb, and the index finger is called the first finger. The middle finger is the second finger, ring finger is the third finger, and pinky is called the fourth finger. Holding the guitar as described on the previous page, practice pushing down the string against the fret using your fingertip. If your fingernails are long, it's time to trim them. Your first chord. Now you're ready to begin making music by pressing and releasing the fingers of your left hand into what is known as a chord, a set of notes that sound good together. The first chord we'll learn is the D major chord. Put your first finger of your left hand on the third string, not quite at the second fret. Now, in addition to the first finger, put your second finger on the first string, thinnest, also near the second fret. Both fingertips need to be close to the fret. You may have to turn your hand slightly to accomplish this. Finally, reach out with the third finger to press the second string of the third fret. This is sort of a reach. Press the strings down with all three fingertips. Strum the four thinnest strings while holding this position. Congratulations! You're playing a D chord. Counting. Count 1, 2, 3, 4, strumming on the one of each count. Knowing the D, G, and A7 chords, you can play arrangements of thousands of songs, including All Star by Smash Mouth, Wild Thing by the Troggs, Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves, and the classic Pep Band tune Louie Louie, first made popular by the Kingsmen. Take a look at the riff to the right. A short rhythmic phrase that is repeated over and over. First, look at the counting helps above the chord, and then try playing the chords to the counts. With this simple riff, you're on your way to playing lots of songs. The second chord. The G chord goes as follows. It will take a big stretch. Put your second finger on the sixth thickest string close to the third fret. Next, put your third finger on the opposite side of the guitar neck on the first thinnest string, also close to the third fret. Finally, put the first finger on the fifth string next to biggest and close to the second fret. Strum all six strings. Practice moving from D chord to the G chord. Your third chord. Finally, you'll learn the A7 chord. It only uses two fingers. It's a lot like the D chord, only with the first two fingers instead of three. Once you've got these three chords down, you can play a lot of cool songs. Begin placing your first fingertip on the fourth string at the second fret. Then add your second finger to the second string, also at the second fret. That's it. It feels just like the first two fingers on a D chord, except that you're holding down the fourth and second strings instead of the first and third. Strum the five thinnest strings on the A7 chord, from thick to thin. The wind riff. And remember Dan's advice. The most important thing you can do as a guitar player is play the guitar. If you don't keep playing, you won't get better. Studies show that it takes about 15 minutes to really get into practice session. So Dan says to plan on practicing at least 30 minutes at a time, three or more times a week. Our next article, from pages 38 and 39, Looking for the Right Stuff. It has pictures here of people sitting down, and it looked like they're on bicycles. Well, let's find out. NASA's Great Moon Buggy Race put student teams to the test. The starting horn blows, and another buggy thunders up the course with all the force its two-person crew can muster, at least until it hits the first obstacle lying in wait in NASA's annual Great Moon Buggy Race. Winding nearly a mile around the U.S. Rocket and Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, the race course features 17 obstacles representing lunar modules, regolith, impact craters, and even a moon dust pit. Watching a team's hopes shatter on a lunatic curve, it's easy to see NASA designed this course to test the buggies and their drivers to the max. What it takes. Finishing with a competitive time requires strategy, hard work, physical strength, teamwork, and a smart build. That's because the moon buggy race just isn't a contrast against opponents or the clock. It challenges the strength and endurance of each high school and college team. They work for months to design, build, and operate these buggies for two action-packed race days. Like the original that astronauts piloted across the moon, each moon buggy has to be small enough to fold up in a 4-foot by 4-foot crate, light enough to carry by hand, and easy to reassemble quickly with a minimum of tools. This past April, more than 70 teams from around the world entered the race. The University of Utah team, with the Eagle Scout members, was especially eager to beat its first day second place showing of 4 minutes 39 seconds. "We want to win it or break it today," driver Thomas Holt says. "We ran into it a little conservatively yesterday because we hadn't taken on anything so intensive before," teammate Stephen Bratt says. The team had worked late the previous night repairing a damaged steering post, but was confident there would be no serious breakdowns on the final day. Oops. Getting the job done. With powerhouse peddlers Clint Child and Ada Van Zantine operating the buggy, a crucial well breaks just seconds after the start, leaving Clint and Ada stranded high and dry. "It's something we could have fixed easily, but we just didn't know," Stephen says. "Our buggy probably has 100 welds on it. It looked like they were holding up fine." "I don't feel bad," teammate Eric Laidlaw says. "I think sometimes you learn more from losing than you learn from winning." The team then watches as buggies crash, teams struggle across the finish line, till others bog down on obstacles and run out of time. Based on the first day showing, the University of Utah team comes in a respectable second place overall in the college division. But they just couldn't let it go. During a lull, NASA officials let Clint and Ada test their repaired buggy in an exhibition run. The result? A blazing 3 minutes and 34 seconds, nearly as fast as the all-time record of 3 minutes 17 seconds set in 2008. Plus, it beat the 2010 winning team's time of 4:18. Too bad the Utah guys wiped out. Cheers break out as they fly over the finish line. Then Clint collapses on the ground, too winded to speak. Unofficially, the team knows it has what it takes, not to win, but to get the job done. It's what astronauts call the right stuff. Of course, it has pictures of these buggies. And the race. Left, high-tech ride of the Huntsville Center for Technology teams from Alabama. Right, authentic lunar buggy in the Davidson Center for Space Exploration at the United States Rocket and Space Center. And now the Wacky Adventures of Pedro, page 43. Well, we hear beamed back to planet Zork, our bemused, bewildered burrow is outfitted in sartorial splendor. And here we have Pedro and his two buddies, and Pedro looks bewildered. And one of his buddies says, "You must dress up for meeting with CEO of Zork Corp, custom-made vacuna jacket." And Pedro says, "Plaid shirt? Cargo pants? Fedora hat, mud boots?" And Pedro says, "Little do they know, the staff of Boys Life calls me the Butto Clothes Horse." Now for just a few alterations. Stitch, yank, add, snip, pin, chalk, pin, stitch, clip. "Great bales of hay, it's true. A handsome Butto looks good in any old thing." And now, great thinker Pedro, meet CEO of Zork Corp. "Oh, no, it can't be. It's my evil mirror twin, Ordep." "What's buzzing, cousin?" Okay, Pedro. Now let's go to Pee Wee Harris. And this time, he looks at wilderness survival. We have a picture here of Pee-wee, and he looks bewildered. "Whoo! this desert goes on and on with no help in sight. And Peabody looks like he's been walking a long time in the desert. He then says, oh, I hate to do it, but I think it's time to crack open my super tiny Mighty Micro survival kit. Okay, first things first. A little shelter from the sun might be nice. Whoop! And all of a sudden, a tent pops up. Now, that's more like it. And there's Pee-wee standing next to a nice tent with a big sign on top of the roof that says, help. Next, now it's time to collect and purify some water. Man, I'm thirsty. And he has a little purifying machine. And hungry. And now a few pills pop out. And Pee-wee's eating a nice burger. And he's... And here comes a ranger. So, you see, guys, every item on our mini survival kit checklist fits snugly in this tiny tin container. Any questions? And Pee-wee says, a little one on the bulky side, isn't it? Okay. And on page 45, there's Bible stories. And this is from Joshua, part 2. Now the Hebrew spies had returned to Joshua with their report concerning the fortress of Jericho. Then the people began their preparations to claim the land that the Lord had long promised to give them. They first set up a stone memorial to commemorate all that the Lord had done for them in the wilderness. Then the people celebrated the feast of Passover and dedicated themselves to the Lord. Now, as Joshua surveyed the fortress, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword. He was the captain of the Lord's armies. Joshua fell down in reverence before him and asked, "What message do you have for us?" Then the prince of the Lord's armies instructed Joshua concerning the great fortress. And so it has a picture here of Joshua, and he says, "Are you for us or our enemies?" And he sees, looks like the angel says, "Neither, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Take off your shoes, for this is a place that is holy." And finally, let's go to Think and Grin, page 55. "Sister, what are we giving Mom and Dad for Christmas?" "Brother, a list of everything I want." "Calvin Locker in Orlando, Florida." "Noah, what is a bird's favorite Christmas story?" "Mike, I haven't a clue." "Noah, the finch who stole Christmas." That's from Noah Bartholomew in Port Deposit, Maryland. Pedro's pick. "What do you call a shark that delivers toys at Christmas?" Austin, "I'm stumped." Kaysen, "Santa Jaws." And that's Kaysen Salator in Tyler, Texas. And joke of the month. Warped Wiseman says, "An onion a day keeps your friends away." And that's submitted by Joshua G. in Little Rock, California. A book never written, Joyful Occasions by Holly Days, Matthew Herman in Northridge, California. And finally, Killian, knock, knock. "Gary, who's there?" "Killian, pizza." "Gary, pizza who?" "Killian, pizza on earth, goodwill to men." From Killian Lazaro in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Well, we've run out of time for today's reading. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's reading. So long, till next time.